very excited to talk about this episode.
Oh, good. Oh, man, that means I feel like I have to shit on it then.
No, he was excited to talk about it last week.
That's true.
You weren't excited
to talk about it.
Wait. I just want to reiterate the fact that, like,
oh god, the only one who thinks this.
2.5 stars.
Literally, the middle grade is a bad grade.
You're the only one who doesn't get that. Yes.
Yeah, it is for TV. If you're surfing for movies on like YouTube or Netflix, Netflix or Amazon, and you see a movie that's 2.5 stars, I'm passing over it. Sorry. I'm not going to watch it.
Or a TV series. That's fine. But like
3 stars, right, I think is like the minimum.
What's your favorite show? What's your favorite TV show?
I don't know. Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. Okay, fine. So like, I don't know. This is the episode of Seinfeld.
One of the earlier seasons, like the first season, where it's okay. It's not really that good.
It's just a regular episode of the show.
But I skip those episodes.
That's okay.
When I go to rewatch.
Hold on. You think the first season of Seinfeld is just okay?
Yeah, the first like 2 seasons aren't really that good. They're okay. There are some good episodes in there, but there are some episodes
The
drunk British guy's dog that he meets on the airplane.
Farfel?
That's not a good episode.
Tippy Toe Lemon Tree in the first season?
No, that's later on. Yeah.
Not too much later. The other one with the other guy who brings the prostitute to his house that he doesn't want to be friends with.
The guy from Michael Chiklis. Is that Michael Chiklis?
No, it's not Michael Chiklis.
Are you sure?
Oh, no, yeah, that's a different one.
That is Michael Chiklis.
Yes. Kramer and Riyadh.
That's not the one I'm thinking. That is in the city. You said to call when I was in the city. That is Michael Chiklis. That's another episode. It's okay. And then there's another one with, I can't remember the other guy. There's some episodes in the first season and a half, two seasons that are okay. It's not that good.
So the last episode is a solid. It's not a Thor the Dark World, which is like, or the pits. It's like, or the original Hulk or whatever. It's like a solid...
Wait, is Thor the Dark World the second one?
Yeah, it's one of the worst Marvel films, in most people's opinion, apparently not Brendan's.
Okay.
It's like the first Thor or, you know, whatever. It's like just a regular, okay movie.
I swear to God, I don't even know what episode... Are you talking about the last episode of Seinfeld or the last episode of Wheel of Time?
I think he's talking about Wheel of Time.
I was trying to bring it back. Anyway, I'm excited to talk about this week's...
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
You guys ready to start? Sounds like we're all warmed up.
Thor the Dark World rules.
Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I'm your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-hosts, Jen Isgrove, Tom Kokoza, and special co-host, Brendan Johnston. How are you, Jen? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk about this episode. I have some thoughts again.
That's why we do this podcast.
It is. I have to love coming to share my thoughts with everyone here.
Hopes and dreams. Tom, how you doing?
I'm excited that Jen's singing her thoughts already. We haven't even really started the show yet. That's a good sign for tonight. I am very, very excited. I couldn't stop thinking about this episode since I watched it late last night, and for good reasons. I think all good thoughts. I'm ready to talk about it.
It sounds like you have You have different feelings about this episode.
I've got a lot of feelings, Joe. Yeah,
Brendan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm also excited to talk about the show. I also had different feelings about this episode than last episode, so we'll see what those are.
I have some different feelings about this episode than last episode, too.
Ooh.
What does that mean, though?
I don't know. Listen
and find out. All right, so just to remind everyone, the first half of our episode will be spoiler-free, so if you have not read the books, do not fear. We will not spoil anything. Maybe we'll say like one or two things that might have been different, but they're not spoilers, so don't worry about that part. And then once we complete our spoiler-free segment, we will then talk about spoilers of the second half of the podcast. But before we get into all of that, we of course must begin with Jen's recap of episode 107.
Jen's recap, TM. Okay, episode 7, The Dark Along the Ways, written by Amanda Kate Schumann and Catherine B. McKenna.
New information, everybody. We did not know that.
We didn't. And directed by Kieran Donnelly. We open on an extremely pregnant veiled woman who is kicking the shit out of a bunch of soldiers on a snowy mountainside. Did I say extremely pregnant? I meant in active labor. She takes a knife wound in her side during a contraction. I mean, give her a break. As she sits down, preparing to give birth, another soldier appears and holds his sword to her throat. Moraine and Lan walk into the ways, refusing to reopen the waygate for Matt. Loial tells them there can be no channeling in the ways, or they will summon Machin Shin. Reluctantly, the others follow, Nynaeve promising they will find Matt when this is all over. Lan wonders if Matt could be the Dragon Reborn, and Moraine says if he is, it's best he stays away from the Dark One rather than join him. Loial laments about how the ways used to be filled with trees. Perrin sees a guiding stone ahead in the pitch blackness. It has been defaced by someone, but Loial still thinks he can read it. Moraine tells the others to rest while he does, and Lan mentions that something is following them. Egwene awakens to a distinct whistling sound. A Trolloc appears from the blackness and is blasted back by channeling and into a bottomless pit. The group runs for the closer waygate to Faldara, as Machin Shin, a sentient black wind, chases after them. It surrounds them, and each of them hears their worst fears repeated back to them in their own voice. Except Loial, because apparently we don't care about him enough yet. Nynaeve explodes in a blast of channeling again, holding Machin Shin off long enough for Moraine to open the waygate, and they all escape. Inside the fortress city of Faldara, they are brought before Lord Aglamar and his sister, Lady Amelisa. Some soldiers refer to Lan as Daishan. Moraine warns Aglamar about Trollocs using the ways, and advises that he seal up the Faldaran waygate. But too late, because Whistly McGee himself, Padden Fane, has come sauntering out of the waygate and toward Faldara.
Whistly McGee. Nice touch.
Moraine talks to Amelisa about visiting Min, a seer. She asks Amelisa, a tower-trained channeler but not an Aes Sedai, to send a message to the Red Aja in Tar-Valon to find Matt. The group walks through the city while Rand is still brooding over what he heard in the ways. Perrin thinks he saw Padden Fane. Spoiler alert, he did. In Min's bar, Moraine asks her if she sees visions around the Two Rivers folk. She does. Perrin's yellow eyes, Rand holding a baby, a white flame and a gold ring around Egwene and Nynaeve. She tells Moraine that around her, she sees the Ammerlin seat, and that she will be Moraine's downfall. That night, Moraine tells them they will leave at dawn for the Eye of the World, and that whoever is not the dragon will die there. Nynaeve tells her they will all choose whether or not they will go with her. Egwene wants to go, and thinks Nynaeve would too if she didn't hate Moraine. The discussion goes downhill, starting with Rand defending Matt, and ending with Perrin and Rand arguing over Egwene. Moraine and Lan discuss when they first met, and she says she feels like she has taken everything from him. Lan assures her she has given him something to live and die for. Moraine tells him she likes Nynaeve, but he says nothing, per usual. Nynaeve follows Lan through the city, where he sits down to dinner with a family, the men also wearing Hadoris and calling Lan Daishan. Lan catches Nynaeve peeping outside and invites her in to join them. They walk back to Lan's room together afterward, but he leaves her in the hall. Rude. Nynaeve waits until he's had time to take his shirt off, then goes in anyway. More making out, more cameras panning away. Egwene approaches Rand in the archery pavilion, and they make up. They both cry, then Rand agrees to be her warder once she's an Aes Sedai. Second makeout, a new record. Egwene promises to stand by Rand no matter what if he's the Dragon Reborn. Nynaeve is getting ready to peace out on Lan, but he wakes up. She asks him what Daishan means, and Lan tells her that he should be the King of Melkir, a land overtaken by the Blight. The older man at dinner saved Lan from being slaughtered along with his family and brought him to Faldara. Nynaeve understands why he wanted to belong to Moraine, but Lan insists she does not own him and invites Nynaeve to stay. Rand lies in bed with Egwene and thinks about Beltane and his father's feverish ramblings in the woods about a baby. We see a montage of Rand channeling, "What?" and hear Machin Shin telling him he's the Dragon Reborn. Rand goes back to Min, who tells him when she was a kid, she saw a vision around a soldier with his Heron Mark blade. Tam was the soldier who helped the Veiled Woman give birth on Dragonmount. The woman died, and Tam raised the baby as his own. Now, around Rand, Min sees rainbows, carnivals, and three beautiful women. She won't answer whether or not he returns from the Eye. Egwene, Perrin, and Nynaeve meet up in the morning, all having decided to go to the Eye. But where's Rand? He's gone to Moraine and told her he's the Dragon Reborn. And after masking her bond again, the two have taken off alone into the Blight and the Eye of the World beyond. By the way, where's Loial?
He's off in his room writing that hit song, Alone in My Principles.
Yeah, Alone in My Principles.
Thank you, Jen. Excellent recap.
Well done.
That's all right, terrific.
So I'm going to say, this is the first thing I'm going to say. I challenge anyone here to say that the cold open was not the best scene in the entire show so far.
Challenge not accepted.
I will say it's definitely, in my opinion, the best shot scene. I think the fight choreography and the cinematography were unbelievable. I know in some earlier episodes, the show, like for some group of watchers, has been docked for the color choices because like things are bright and vibrant and the people have a lot of color and they're, I don't know, people think that doesn't look good for some reason. But every color popped in this, you know, against the snow. And I think it was a really, it was a scene full of striking imagery. And obviously the fight was unbelievably cool. That's my take.
That was for sure, I think, one of the best shot scenes in the entire show so far. I think it was long overdue that we got some more combat. I feel like we've got a lot in episode one and we haven't seen any real fighting, I don't think, since, I mean, there was a little bit of in episode three. Four, there was a channel fight. That's right. I was thinking more Trollocs and Shadowspawn and things like that. We haven't really gotten. I feel like the Trollocs have gone from the story. They were in like the first two episodes, three episodes, and that was it. There's like the Trollocs are gone and there's no more.
Were they even in the third episode? They kind of just get away from them at the ferry.
Third episode, Shadow Logoth. They chase him to Shadow.
That's the second episode.
Trollocs. So it's the first two episodes, and that's really it. Yeah. I mean, there's one
Trolloc in this episode.
Yeah, you see a fade in the fifth episode, right?
Fourth episode. I think there we'll see plenty of them in the next episode. That's my guess.
Yeah.
But this is the first fight where, like, I guess everyone involved was really good at fighting as a character. You know, there were soldiers versus a super warrior.
Yeah. So that just to give credit to that actress, she's, I think she's like a stunt. She's like a stunt person, but also does some acting. Her name was Magdalena Sitova.
Yeah. She joined Twitter today.
She was awesome.
She was really good. Really, really good.
I have a question, Brendan. Did you immediately know that this was a flashback?
Not immediately, but I assumed, if only because last episode's cold open was a flashback.
A lot of them have been flashbacks.
There was absolutely no context for it.
Yeah.
So, and then when I think, you know what? I watched it twice, but I don't remember when you see the, never mind. I was going to say, when you see the single edged blade with the heron on it, it was obviously Tam, but that doesn't come till later. That's not in the
You see it at the very end of that scene.
Okay.
You see it pan up the sword and you see the Hemmark blade and then that's it. That's how the scene ends.
Okay. Right, you see the Hemmark blade at the beginning?
He doesn't take his helmet off until the
Do you see the heron? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew you saw it at some point. But
it's a close up of her like lying there after she like pulls her, you know, rips her clothes and whatever. And then you see a sword blade like appear into the frame, like right up to her chest. And then it pans out up the blade until you get to the hilt where you see the Heronmark right above the hilt. And then, you're right. I think it gives you a shot of him standing over her, but he has got his helmet on and you can't see.
That's right. You're right. Because you do see the helmet, but he doesn't take the helmet off.
Yeah.
So, I could tell it was a flashback based on that. And again, there wasn't a ton of context, but even without the context, just as like a fantasy action set piece, it was really cool. And I definitely agree that it was the best action sequence or fight sequence or whatever you want to call it of the show so far.
Yeah, they need more of that stuff. I just think the show's lacking a little bit of it. Maybe because the last three episodes, it was kind of a lot of
talky talk.
Yeah, a lot of talky talk. After that cold open, we get to the ways. They're arguing over, we got to go open up the way gate. We got to go get Matt. They're arguing back and forth. And then Loial mentions, he's like, well, you can't use the one power in the ways, because if it does, it'll draw matching Shin to us. And we learn out there's some sort of evil black wind in the ways that would come after them if they channel, which immediately brought to my mind, like, well, how are they going to get out of the ways if they can't channel?
Well, you got to hope that it's not close to you already, I guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't come on them immediately. They channel and then they run for a while before it catches up to them. So I guess you're at the door, you should be all
right. Right. Yeah. And ideally, you're at the door, you're leaving. So.
Yeah.
Right.
That was my justification, too, thinking about it. Was like, well, I guess, because immediately I thought, wait, how are they going to get out if you can't channel? And then I'm like, well, I guess if she channels at the exit, they'll be okay because they'll just go right out and they'll be fine. One thing I wanted to bring up was, in this argument about Matt, and obviously they had to rewrite a bunch of these episodes, I'm sure, because they didn't plan on not having Barney Harris in these episodes. So I have to say, first of all, you know, hats off to the writing on the, and this episode and the next one, even though we haven't seen it, but having to like literally rewrite a lot of the scenes and a lot of the script just because of that. There was something interesting that I thought that Moraine said, that she said there's an inherent darkness within Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about how, like, you know, the dagger was feeding off him, but he was also feeding off the dagger. And she's glad that he's not there. I think she resigns herself or says, oh, well, if he's not here, he's probably not the dragon. And if he is, we can't bring him to the Eye of the World because he joined the Dark One.
Yeah, I mean, for as awkward as Matt's exit from the show last week was, which I think we all commented on to one extent or another, I think they did a really good job of, like you said, of explaining, if not necessarily why he wasn't there, why it was okay that he wasn't there, and maybe for the best. He left weirdly, but they explained it well, I think.
I agree. I want to talk more about that in the second half of the show.
Okay.
Like what that comment means or doesn't mean or whatever the case may be. Based on, I guess, some book stuff.
I'll bring it up now. It happens later in the episode. Because I was wondering if this is just speculation for Moraine, or is this something she knows for a fact, that there's a darkness inside of him? Like,
well, she
is
says
he
it,
going to be evil?
She says it in the when she removes the dagger from him. She says it then, too.
Yeah.
Like, he was strong, but, like, there was an affinity that went both ways there. So I don't know exact terminology she uses. But
it was the first, feeding on him as much as he was feeding on it or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's there. And I think they play it in the show that obviously I think, you know, they show when the chips are down, he's going to do the right thing, you know, early on. But that there is like a temptation in him to do the wrong thing to solve problems. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's poor and he wants to help his sisters out of a bad situation. But stealing is wrong. Right. And like that's how he does it. And like, he's grown up in an environment where, like, his male role model is apparently a really awful person, and, like, he has the instincts to kind of follow along in that. And they tease mm-hmm. that in the show as well. So, like, I think that it's in the show, and I think that there's – that refers to stuff, I think, in the books as well.
So – and it's so much so that when they get to Faldara, Moraine asks Lady Amelisa to send a message to the White Tower to find Matt, and she's like, who do I send the message to? And she's like, the Red Aja. Which is like, oh, fucking damn. Like,
yeah. That was cold-blooded.
That was cold-blooded. So now I'm wondering what's going to happen.
I think that she just wants them to, like, hold him up until they could get back.
She don't have control over what they're going to do to him.
Yeah.
That's not really... I mean, we're 7 episodes in. We kind of know at this point what the Red Aja style is. And she isn't sending them after Matt to capture him.
Right.
Well, they can't... Yeah. Gentle him because he doesn't channel.
Right. Well, right. She doesn't know that yet, though.
She doesn't know that.
That's true. She doesn't.
And she's feeling, basically, if he's the dragon reborn and he can channel, then that's bad. So this gentle him, it'll be better off.
Oh, I have a problem with that.
If
she really thinks he's the dragon reborn and is sicking the reds after him and knows what the reds will do to him, then isn't she condemning her whole... She's basically giving up her whole quest and mission.
Well, from her perspective, I mean... I don't think she thinks he is the Dragon Reborn, but if he is the Dragon Reborn, her whole quest is boned anyway.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Right, and she said it before, right? Like
she did.
She'll kill them before she lets the Dark One take them, and like I guess that's she's made that decision for Matt Coffin. Like
we're taking that literally. She was speaking literally, but I guess she's putting her money where her mouth is. No, I'm gonna kill if Matt's the dragon. He's gonna get you know snatched up by the Reds and. They'll have their way with him. Oh, man.
Also,
that's pretty intense.
I also think, not for nothing, there's also a certain amount of... She might just be impressed with the Red's Eyes and Ears Network, at least around Tar Valon, because they were able to find out everything she was trying to hide in that city. So she might also... There might just be a little bit of calculation there about, like, you know what? If anyone can find him, even if he's trying to hide, they'll be able to find him.
I don't know. I would have thought... If she was just... wanting to detain him or keep him, you know, in a secure location, protecting everybody from him and him from himself, she would have sent word back to the Blue Aja.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I think that you could also kind of read it about, like, they're the ones who have the best shot of finding him.
Yeah, I guess that's what
they think. If he's trying not to be found.
I don't know. If the Blue have the best eyes in his
life,
I would think they would have.
But they have the best shot of finding him, but when they find him, she knows what they're going to do.
They do.
So it's, if she just wanted him found and caught, she'd have sent the message to Alana. I mean,
Or the blues.
Sending, or yeah, but we don't know any of the blues. Not really.
Well, we know one.
There was one other blue who had like one other scene. But like,
and she was leaving, right? She's leaving.
Right.
Yeah.
So like she sent a group that we know of, we being the television, like the television only audience, which is who they have to play to, really. She sent the Reds after him because she wants him taken out. That's the point of that scene.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, we get some history of the Ways from Loial, which was, you know, nice. We kind of, we all predicted this, that we were going to get a little bit of Ways exposition from Loial, and I think they handled it in a good way. I thought they hit the nail on the head with his character when he says something like, Egwene says something like, oh, I can't think of anything worse. And Loial's like, well, I can think of at least one. And then Rand kind of shuts him up and is like, oh, we get it, Loial.
I think he says three. He's like, falling into a bottomless pit, I can't think of anything worse. He's like, I can think of at least three things.
Yeah.
I also
Rand puts
like
an end to it. I think that's Loial to the T from the books. Yeah. So I really love that. I want to see, I love Hamed's portrayal of Loial. Every time I see him talk, I hear him talk, I see him on screen, I'm like, I love it, and I want more of him.
I agree wholeheartedly. And you know what? Just because you brought it up, and Jen brought it up at the end of her thing, I'm going to come up with my, this is my biggest problem with the episode, and it's completely unimportant, whatever. My biggest problem with the episode is they get to Faldara, and Loial disappears. Is just gone. Never referenced. Yeah. You don't see him in the background. He just gone. And
like what is he doing there?
What's he doing?
I don't know.
Right. And like, that's, I'm just,
he's hanging out with Perrin for the back half of the episode.
Even if you just had a, everyone's getting it on and like him and Perrin are just drinking a cup of coffee or whatever, that would be like, okay, you know.
Or, you know.
Or whatever. Hey. And honestly, he's not needed, but he's so great. I want more of him. The other line in the Ways that I really liked was, just give me a little bit of time. I'm going to need to, like, you know.
Yeah.
And Rand's like, just in the background, you hear him, like assigning to Perrin, like, we are going to be here forever.
Yeah, if he wants us for patience, we'll be dead.
Yeah, it's like Moraine asked him to come with them. He kind of did save them by getting them to the Waygate. And then they just ignore him for the rest of the episode.
You did what we needed you for.
Right, and now just hang out in Faldara for no reason.
And now you're in Faldara.
Yeah, like, hi, I'm
did
in Faldara.
Did we even see, I don't even remember now, this is how much, was he in the room with Agamemnon?
When they're walking in, oh yes, they are. He is there. Because I was going to say the last time we see him is when they're walking into the city and he asks Lan something and Lan just doesn't answer him, much like someone asked Loial something and he just didn't answer them in the Ways. Which just struck me as being two examples of these characters being rude for no reason.
Lan never answers anyone.
Yeah, that I get. What did they ask Loial that he didn't answer?
What Match and Shin, and he just doesn't respond.
Oh.
He just changes the subject. Yeah. And then later, Lan does the same thing to him, and it jumped out to me.
I think there's two different reasons for it. He doesn't want to scare anybody. And that's why he doesn't say what Match and Shin is. I think he's trying to be, I don't know, almost considerate. And like, there's no need to frighten you. I'm just not going to answer your question. Whereas Lan's like, I don't talk about myself at all. But I also think it's interesting. And I was excited about the fact that like Loial seemed to know who he was in a way that like knows that he's from here. Like the question that he asks is like, when was the last time you were here or something to that effect? Or how long has it been? You know, are you excited to come back or something like that? And I'm like, oh, like Loial is like sharp. He knows who he is.
It seems like everybody knows who Lan is except for the Emmonsfield.
Well, they're rubes.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But Loial is too, in a way. He's very book smart, but like this is his first time out in the world.
Yeah, we haven't gotten any of that. They could have thrown that in there. Like, you know, there's no perspective of Loial's character and why he was in Tarvalon. I think he was just talking about, you know, you can see the gardens, you know, Ogier allowed to go. Is that why he's there? What is he doing in Tarvalon? Why did he go with them? I mean, we assume that there's, you know, conversations with Moraine in the background in the last episode that happened. That's why he came. But it'd be nice to get a little bit more of Loial's motivation and, you know, his a little bit of his backstory. Something that I wanted to point out is that Perrin, while they're in the ways, Perrin's like, there's something up ahead. And I love how the camera pans to up ahead and you no one sees anything. Like, even we don't see anything. And you're like, what is he talking about? What does he see? And then they get up to the guidepost. And I'm glad Rand called him out on that. Rand was like, how did you see that? Is this part of Perrin's golden eye? Is this golden eye power? He can see really far away. Brendan, I'll go to you.
Yeah, I mean, I just to put it in Dungeons and Dragons terms, I think like he'd leveled up and his dark vision activated. Like he got, that's just part of his ability table now.
I like
that. Yeah, that's just what I assumed, that it was like he, yeah, his golden, I can't say golden eyes because it just makes me think of James Bond. So I'm sticking with yellow eyes, but.
Get used to it.
Yeah, I assume that was part of, just part of that, part of his wolf powers.
Mm-hmm. There's a small line
or
that
his
bothers,
dragon powers.
Or his dragon powers. That's right. Well, we're going to find out who the dragon is in a little bit. There was a line in here that bothered me a little bit, and I feel like it. I don't know if this was just a careless line that slipped through the cracks, or like they thought nobody would question it. But when they get to the signpost, and Loial's like, "I gotta translate." Moraine's like, "Oh, get your rest. The waygate's only another day away. Like travel. How does she know that?" How does she know that the waygate's only a day away? After they explain that, like, traveling through the ways, time is skewed, first of all.
Well, so, I think, don't they say traveling through the ways, time is skewed in the, like, regular world? Like, it's a day there, but it could be an hour in the real world or whatever the proper term is.
I guess my question is, how does she know if she traveled the ways before? Has she been through that part that she knows the distance from the gates to, you know, gate to gate? They don't really tell you anything about that. And I guess they do that a lot in this show where you just kind of like, oh, Moraine knows. They don't tell you. They don't explain how she knows or why she would know something like this. So we're just supposed to know that all. I said, I know this. So Moraine is all knowing.
Something I've noticed is that a lot of the things that are presented as very mysterious in this show are then turn around and present them as simultaneously very practical. Like the whole idea, like we talked about it last week, the whole idea that, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, the whole idea that the Dark One's prison is a physical location that you can travel to.
Mm-hmm.
When previously I was under the impression that the Dark One's prison was like a state of mind or a metaphysical, you know, some sort of metaphor or something. Mm-hmm. Like the Dark One's prison was in the hearts of all mankind or whatever, whatever it was going to turn out to be. But instead, no, the Dark One's prison is over there.
Yeah,
right. It's in this place. We know where he is.
Right. So it's like it's this magical portal that we have to use magic to open, and you can't use magic inside of it. But it's only 10 miles.
Yeah, it's only a day's walk. Right. And oh, by the way, the Dark One's prison is also a day's walk from the city over here.
Right.
Awfully close to Faldara there, the Dark One's prison. So, like, watching it a second time, I noticed, and I didn't catch it on the first time, but you noticed there's like, they're setting up this later Pegwayne Rand confrontational scene in this. Did you guys notice this? When,
yes.
I think Rand's lying down and Egwene like kind of sits next to him and he's like, come here. And then they kind of pan over to Perrin and he does like I just snorted coke wipe of his nose and broods over in the corner.
I've heard.
And the first time I watched it, I thought he was just, I'm sad because you have a girlfriend and I killed my wife.
Yes.
I have no one to snuggle with me. And then I didn't pick up on Nynaeve's look too. But
I 100% agree.
On the second time, you see like he makes a face and then Nynaeve looks at him and then looks at them and she's making a face too.
So let's just get into it.
Yeah.
Let's. First of all, if we're going to have a short name for that triangle, I think Pregwayne is the only way to go.
Pregwayne.
Pregwayne. Oh no. Let's get into it. Let's just talk about it right now. My least favorite part of this episode, and
hated it,
was that whole scene we got with, you know, Nynaeve blurts out, and I'm sick of you two fighting over her like she's somebody who can win, and then they're like, oh, Rand's like, oh, you have feelings for her, and Perrin's like, no, I have only loved my wife. And first of all, right, we clearly know that something was cut from the first episode, and there's like this very, very like weak undertone of this happening, like, we get the scene in, you know, in the first episode. We got the scene earlier in this episode. Why? Why did they put this in here?
I'll say this. I have no idea why.
It served no purpose.
Why this is a storyline in the show at all.
Yeah.
But I think I'm one of two people who are okay with this storyline being in this episode. Because the only reason I'm okay with it being in this episode is because a lot of our commentary about episode one was what the hell is going on with Perrin and his wife.
Yeah.
And like, now you know. So I'm glad that they did tell you.
But it seems like it's not even it's weird because it seems like it's not even true.
No. Perrin's voice in the Black Wind. Perrin's voice in the Black Wind is telling him, like, you killed your wife because you don't love her or whatever.
But Egwene's kind of like brushing it off, like, nah, he doesn't really like me.
Because he's embarrassed.
No, I don't think she knows.
No, Egwene does not know.
Yeah. But I think that there is, that's a real thing. Part of it I really don't like.
Perrin's just becoming they're just making Perrin a horrible person over more and more. He kills his wife. He wants to be with Egwene.
I don't think that he wants to be with Egwene. I think that he has feelings for her, but like those aren't things that he wanted to act on. And I don't think that there's it's a complicated thing.
It didn't need to be in this show at all.
I agree with that. And I want to talk about this more later on because I think that it has repercussions for Perrin as the show goes on.
Did you feel about this scene in the show, considering you haven't read the books, so did it make sense? Did it fit?
I mean, it made sense. Like, I can understand why people didn't like it. I didn't love it, but I've learned about myself over the last 5 to 10 years that I can't. Stories about teenagers aren't for me anymore, and that's effectively what these people are. So, like, this sort of behavior, this sort of argument wasn't that weird or out of place to me. It just, like, it wasn't for me, but I didn't think it was inherently bad or that it shouldn't have been there. I do think, though, that they continue to make the worst part of the show worse every time they go back to it. Because now, it's not just a terrible accident that relies on a terrible, tired, sexist trope. It's a terrible accident that relies on a terrible, tired, sexist trope that was maybe a little on purpose.
No.
I know it wasn't, but they've now introduced that into the story.
Right.
They're just piling on.
They keep making the worst part of it worse every single time they go back to it.
Well, I hope this is the end of it. I really don't.
It's not.
It's not.
No?
Come on.
First of all, I think, buckle in. I think Perrin killing his wife is a series-long touchstone. Yep. I think he's going to be worried about this if this series goes 8 seasons.
He's still going to be talking about this in season 8. Go ahead, Jen.
Perrin killing his wife, as much as I don't like it, I understand why they did it. I see the end game of it.
Yeah, and I see
this
it going on.
Love
not
triangle
this part.
Yes. Makes no sense. Does I don't see what the purpose of this is.
I do see a purpose for it that we will talk about in the second half of the show.
Okay.
I also don't like that.
I'm eager to hear this. this was the thing I disliked the most about the episode, by the way, everyone.
Yeah.
I have another thing that I have to talk about later also.
All right. Okay. Make your notes, people.
Can I talk about something quick that I do like about the episode that happens right after Perrin hears Bastion's, you know. And I do think that a lot of the stuff that they're saying is lies. It's almost like, I don't think that that's true. What he hears, I think that it tells him the thing that he doesn't want to hear the most, right? I don't
think
that's
true.
So I just want to make a comment about that. So we didn't hear Loial's, right? But we hear everyone else's. And, you know, later we get the reveal of Rand being the dragon. And one of the flashback cutscenes is to Machin Shin telling him that he's a dragon. Reflecting on that, I thought it would have been much cooler if they didn't cut to Rand, if they didn't even show Rand's hearing. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like when they're cutting back and forth to everybody and what the hearing, I think they should have skipped Rand and that would have been cool. And like some people wouldn't have picked up on it and some people would have, and they would have been like, ooh, why did they skip Rand? And it's not like they're, you know, waiting to pay it off like for episodes upon episodes. It's just later in the episode. I thought that would have been a cool like reveal. It's like, oh, that's why we didn't hear Rand's, because they didn't want us to know yet that he was the Dragon Reborn. If they were asking my opinion on the episode and said, you know, how can we make this episode better? I would have said, cut Rand's little match in chin scenes, so that way it would have been cooler of a reveal later on.
Quick, something that it's really goofy, but I don't know why I really, really liked it. I love that the physical effect of hearing Machin Shin at the first is that everyone gets a case of pink eye.
What do you mean pink eye?
Who?
What?
Everybody, when they walk out of the Faldara,
they're crying.
Oh. Yeah, I'm sure it is. It also looks like it had a physical effect. That's not just like tears. They're not like teary-eyed. Like their eyes are just all red.
Rand is actually, I think, crying at one point, yeah, though.
They are crying. And I think
and now you know why.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool things that you realize like after the fact, like, oh.
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff that happens in there.
That's why Rand acted that way.
Yes. Yes. Talking about that, like, he's pretty much known all the time, right? He's
pretty much expected, I think. I don't know if let's get into it. Let's just get into it. Rand's reveal of the dragon. We flash back. There's a scene with him taking him back to Two Rivers, where Tam's talking about the scene that we saw in the cold open. We get Rand using his wood power, channeling at the door. You actually see the weaves this time back with Dana. And then, of course, it flashes back to earlier in the episode, which I thought was funny. I was like, you're flashing back to like 10 minutes ago, which I thought was funny. But when we think Egwene is the one who channels at the Trolloc, it was really Rand. It's cool when you watch. I watched it again, like the first shot of it. Oh, yeah, you don't really see. You just see like Rand come from behind her and you see a weave come out of kind of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the Machin Shin reveal of him being the Dragon Reborn.
So super quick in that, the first time you see the channeling, when it's really happening live, you just see channeling. In the flashback reveal, you see that the channeling is tainted.
Yeah, you see black and then it turns into white. You see like the black and then the white together. Like,
so it's a little bit of a cheat to me, but whatever.
Well, it's weird.
A bit of a cheat in this reveal to me, but.
Why? Well, I'm curious. So,
go ahead, Brendan. You give me share your opinions on this reveal.
Okay, so they flash back to him knocking the door down back in Mos Eisley, which I'll never remember the name. He knocks the door down, and they show him doing a one power Hadouken or whatever he did to get the door to open, which does not happen in the scene in episode 3 when he did that. I went back and checked.
Well, you don't see the one power.
But you see the one power every time anyone else uses it ever in the show.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Okay. You see it virtually every other time somebody uses it in the show. And it just so happens that you don't see it when it's important to keep it a secret for the really important guy.
Okay,
and
that's
some bullshit.
So there's two things.
If there's going to be rules about how they depict the magic, the rules have to apply to everybody all the time.
I'm going to say, so there's two things I could say that. You're right. There's a little bit of inconsistency with that. I will say that in the very first scene of the show, or I guess it's the second scene, when Leandrin and her three people are riding down the one male channeler and his imaginary friend.
Yeah.
They channel and you don't see it.
I think they start to channel and you pan away.
No, they channel.
Now she like reaches out her hand at the guy and something happens, but you don't see it. I will say in most of the other scenes where you see channeling, the reason we see it is because there are other people in the scene who can see the channeling. I mean, that doesn't hold water for Loghain because nobody can see Loghain channeling when he's there, technically.
Right. But you see channeling when the point of view person from the scene can see it. That's the construct of the show. So
it doesn't hold water with Loghain. Well, Loghain can see himself channeling.
Loghain can see himself channel. And he's a point of view person in the scenes that he's in. In the scene where Perrin is trying to light a fire and Egwene lights the fire, you don't see Egwene channel.
That's true.
Right? There's another scene, and I don't remember exactly.
Jason points out that Leandrin, in that beginning scene, Leandrin brings the rocks down. You don't actually see the weaves.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's another scene, I think it's also in episode 1. I'm not 100% sure, but there is another scene, I think, where Moraine channels and you don't see it. And it's something minor, but you don't see it. But most of it you do, and I can understand that. I think that if that is the conceit that the show is going with, they should have given you a good scene of, like, it's clearly from the boy's point of view and the girl's channel, and you don't see it. Something to, like, show that doesn't happen. The conceit is not clear. And
exactly.
To the point, and we talked about this when we talked about the Nynaeve episode where she channels at the end of the episode, that it really reads like that Loghain can see her channel. And yes. It took someone from the show tweeting out the fact that he saw the effect of the channeling, and that's what he reacted to. And that's clearly reacted to the channeling. Like, I don't know.
Yes, he did.
She glowed like a sun. He said, glows like the sun.
Right.
So, like, they need to be clearer with that, and they weren't. So I can see what you're talking
about. I mean, that scene could have easily been explained that when she was channeling, she channeled literally a visible burst of light.
Yeah.
That could have just been easily the explanation for that scene. But getting back to his reveal, first of all, we got Rand channeling, which is awesome. We get his reveal of being the dragon reborn. And I think that explains some of the other stuff. So again, watching it a second time, this is like an episode I highly recommend you have to watch a second time and pay attention to Rand. A lot of it, because in that scene where they have the fight over Egwene, they're talking about, I have it here too. When they're talking about going to the Eye, they're debating about it. And Egwene's like, I'm going to go. Rand says, we've lost too many already. Something to that effect. Can't lose anymore.
I won't lose anyone else in this room, he says.
Yeah, I don't want to lose anyone else in this room. And he kind of gets up and walks away. And I think this is the point. He knows he's the dragon at this point, obviously, because he's already had the match and Shin encounter and all of the other stuff. I think this is the point where he decides, I need to sneak out and go by myself.
I don't think this is the point.
Because I don't want anybody else to die. He's like, I'm the dragon. I don't want my friends to die. I'm going to go by myself.
I almost agree with you, but not exactly. I think this is where he thinks about, I'm going to have to leave by myself. But he doesn't decide that he's doing that. I think after he talks to Egwene again, when they have that conversation, when he's like, I'll be your water.
Yeah.
I think that's when he goes, I'm just going to have to fucking go. I'm going to have to leave.
I think he's saying that because he doesn't think he's just placating her and he doesn't think he's coming back.
Yes. If you look back at the entire, again, this is where I wish there was more stuff for him in episodes 5 and 6. But if you look at him from episode 2 on with the idea that in the back of his head, he's going, I'm pretty sure it's me. It explains a lot of his mood swings. It explains a lot of his like ultra defensiveness for Matt and like all the rest of this stuff. And again, that conversation that he has with Matt when they're watching Loghain now takes on even more meaning because he knows or has a pretty strong idea. It's not Matt. It's me. I'm taking care of him now because he's going through something. And I hope that he'll take care of me too because I'm probably going to go through something pretty bad.
Yeah. And some people were complaining about Moraine wouldn't have left and went without Lan. I think my argument against that or my justification of that is, there's a quick earlier conversation where she says, she knows a couple of things. She knows that Lan has feelings for Nynaeve. She even says, I like her, giving her the seal of approval, saying, when I'm gone, you can be with her. Plus, when him and Nynaeve have sex, I'm sure she felt that and knew about that. I think she purposely doesn't take Lan because she's like, she doesn't think she's going to return either. And she's like, I don't want Lan to die because he has something to live for.
They released a behind the scenes video as a special episode kind of a thing. And she talks about that directly, how she feels like she's on a suicide mission.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I want to get Brendan, your perspective on the whole leaving the, Rand going to Moraine and saying that he's the one and the two of them leaving by themselves.
Oh yeah. I think the idea that, she kind of gives Lan tacit permission to go, sort of do his own thing. She doesn't think she's coming back. I thought that was kind of clear kind of the whole time because she's episode 4. From the Stefan episode that isn't really about Stefan.
Yeah.
It's very clear that they're both concerned about what's going to happen to the other one if they die.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that interpretation that she cuts off the bond because she's going off on a suicide mission and she doesn't want him. She doesn't want him following her.
So the show's doing that a lot where, and I don't know, and I guess, Brendan, I think you need to help us with this because I feel like we've been talking about episodes and being like, well, why did they do this and why did they do that? And then they've kind of been going back to it in later episodes and explaining, right? Like why this decision was made or why somebody did that. And from a book reader perspective, since we already know the reasons why, and we're like, well, why didn't they do it here? Why didn't they do it there? From a non-book reader perspective, Does that bother you, or you think that's not a good way to approach it? Because I feel like it's very different for the two groups of people because of that.
No, I mean, I think everything that happens in the show so far has more or less made sense. Has more or less made sense eventually, even if it didn't, even if it wasn't immediately clear, like in the scene or in the episode, why they were, you know, why a certain thing was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't really been an issue, I don't think. But kind of something that you were saying, Joe, about recommending that everyone go back and watch it and watch it again. And Tom saying like, this episode totally recontextualizes everything Rand did previously. I don't love that because I watch every episode twice because I'm on a podcast about it.
Yeah.
If I wasn't, I wouldn't. And yeah. Most people aren't. And I think unless you really love this show and want to watch it again a couple of times, like as a new fan, as a new viewer, you're not going to do that. Like my sister watches it. My younger sister, Veronica, mm-hmm. watches it. And she was telling me the other day that she pretty much likes it. She kind of likes it, but she's only watched every episode once. And with every successive episode, she doesn't know what the hell is going on. And she doesn't like it enough to go back and try and figure it out.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think from your guys' perspective of being fans of this material for years, and from what Tom has always told me and you guys have always talked about how a big thing about the fandom is trying to figure things out, that's all well and good, but that doesn't work for a casual audience.
Yeah. I'm wondering...
Or most of a new audience.
Yeah, I'm like thinking of like rewatchability, and is that something they were thinking of when they make these episodes? Is like,
I think they were. I think you guys are absolutely right.
Yeah.
Like, I think what Tom said about finding out that Rand is the dragon, even though, like for me, it was pretty obvious that Rand was the dragon because he was a farm boy who was clearly adopted, and I've read other stories before. you know, it does. It recontextualizes everything Rand's done so far, which goes a long way toward making Rand not the least interesting one, which he initially appears to be.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know that it's a good strategy to count on people doing that. Yeah. A good storytelling strategy or a good, I guess, marketing strategy.
Yeah. I mean, they're keeping in line with the books because the books are like that. Like you go back and reread the books. Have obviously like a high rereadability. You find new things after you read the book 3 or 4 times and you find new things that you never noticed before that actually make like were deliberately put there. You know, thinking of like other movies or shows, like one of my favorite movies is Fight Club. And when you watch Fight Club, right, there's a big twist at the end. And sorry, you know, spoiler alert from 22 years ago, Brad Pitt and Edward Norton are the same person.
Spoilers in the second half, Joe. Jesus.
22-year-old spoilers. But if you rewatch that movie and then you think about, you specifically watch the scenes where how Ed Norton treats Helena Bonham Carter's character. Because you're wondering why she's reacting during the movie like you think she's a bitch. But if you rewatch it knowing that it's the same person, you're like, oh man, I really feel bad for her. He's really being a piece of shit to her. And that's why she's acting that way.
Right.
Yeah, I like stuff like that. So I guess, I don't know, like similar, like if you watch Mr. Robot as well, it's similar type idea. But
I would say...
Sorry, I ruined Fight Club for everybody.
I would say to Brendan's point, right, one of the things that we talked about on this podcast as we were anticipating the show coming out was like, would the show duplicate the experience of reading the books and like having these mysteries that you need to solve? And like, I think that this first season has said, yeah, they're going to lean really hard into the fact that there are mysteries that you'll have to solve. This is like an object example of that, so that like they're letting viewers know now, like, hey, if you're into this show, you're going to have to pay attention because shit like this is going to happen all the time. Something's going to happen and it's going to recontextualize stuff that you saw before. Or like, you're not going to know exactly what's going on until later on in the episode. Things are going to be revealed to you. And like, that's the setup of the show. We talked about this a lot, like in the first, I think even in the pre-episodes, like when we were prepping for like the show actually coming out, that the first season of the show is a blueprint for how the show is going to be structured. And we've seen that. It's going to have cold opens that are in the past. It's going to like have certain elements to it in the way it tells a story. And I think this is one of those things. And I think they're banking on this being a success. And I think like there's a lot of book readers who are like, why are they making it a mystery? It shouldn't be a mystery. And Brendan's called out. He's like, if you Google one of the characters, the first thing it says is, Randall Thor is the Dragon Reborn. But I think that they're doing that on purpose, because I think there's other mysteries that happen in this series.
Yeah.
That they're going to want you to be involved in.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that maybe later.
And that's fine to an extent. But then I think if that's what they're going to do, I think they have to do it better.
Yeah.
Because like I said, when they said like, oh, all of a sudden, like, hey, remember the scene where Rand definitely didn't channel, even though you've seen everybody doing their channeling almost all the time?
Right.
He was actually channeling, even though he wasn't, because we showed you him not doing it. We just showed him knocking down the door.
I want to move on just to, there's one last section I did want to bring up, and we meet a new character, Min, who's some sort of seer, and she can see visions around people that apparently are kind of like a prophecy or seeing of the future. So I wanted to go through some of her viewings that we hear about and get your guys' opinions on those. So first she's looking at the big brooding one, which Moraine. Moraine just likes, they're both brooding. They're both big and brooding. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Yeah. she sees yellow eyes, which I think we all know what that means. And then she also sees blood on his chin. Any thoughts on what that could possibly be? Is he going to eat somebody? Okay. I'll leave that one there.
Cannibalism is not the way.
We've got Rand holding a baby. I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this one. Whose baby? Why is Rand holding a baby? Whose thoughts are this?
All right. So I'm going to throw this out there. Even though you see that image in the show, is that the baby that she saw in her first vision?
And that's holding himself?
Yeah.
Is that how? Because she says later on, I saw you and I knew who you were.
Yeah.
Right? And is the reason that it's like he's holding the same baby that she saw in her first vision, even though the baby that he's holding is like black haired. So probably not.
I don't know. Jen?
Like, throwing out there.
I thought it was Tam holding the baby, but she just said it was him holding a baby, so that...
We see, though, the vision, though. We see Rand holding the baby. No, you can't just say that. They can't show us something and be like, no, that's not what really she saw.
Brandon just said, yes, they can, and he doesn't like it.
They do it all the fucking time.
Remember when Min saw the baby? No, that isn't what she really saw. Tam holding a baby.
So we're not actually seeing what Min... This isn't from Min's point of view. We're seeing from Min's lying point of view for Moraine.
What did she actually say? Did she say...
He's cradling a baby?
Hold on. I might have it in my...
He's cradling a baby. They show it to you on screen, though. Like a brand standing there.
I know, but maybe she says, he's holding a baby or something. And then that's, what Moraine thinks it is.
So we're seeing what Moraine thinks.
In the next episode, we're going to see it from someone else's perspective, and he's just holding a sack of flour.
He's holding a sheep.
Yeah. I agree with Tom. I actually think somehow he's holding himself.
That baby did not. Yeah,
that,
did not.
That
have
baby is also. Yeah. Well, Randy he was a baby. Bar, so.
He was a baby one day. Someday, what?
No.
I can't believe it.
And she says the girls. She doesn't distinguish. So yes, I don't know if this is for both girls or one girl, and she was just not saying which one, but she sees a white flame and a ring of gold. Thoughts, Brendan, on that?
I think that was another one that was deliberately unclear.
I thought it was pretty clear with the gold ring, at least.
I really couldn't distinguish who was surrounded by what.
Well, no, I know. You're right, because they don't explicitly say, because Moraine says, and the girls.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, what the ring of gold meant. Yeah, I mean, that means at least one of them is going to become an Aes Sedai, because they wear those rings.
I think. I just was wondering if they didn't specify. I imagine that if we're, we've just been talking about how a lot of these things seem deliberate. I'm guessing they purposely didn't specify which one.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they definitely didn't. It was deliberately vague. Just like Min's reference to the Amaranth seat in a few lines later is also deliberately vague.
She says she sees, because Moraine then says, you see something around me, tell me. And she's like, I see the Amaranth seat in full regalia. She's going to be your downfall.
I think it's as deliberate as Moraine swearing to Swan Sancho.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a different Amaranth seat.
Oh.
Amice says that she says, and the redhead is rocking a baby.
Yeah.
Actually, I forget. It doesn't make any sense.
Rand's the only redhead there.
Well, I was thinking of another redhead, but she doesn't rock a baby.
No.
Does it actually rock the baby?
And they show you a vision of Rand standing holding a baby.
I understand what you're saying, but I just don't think that you have to cling to that so hard.
It turns out Min meant she was wearing the baby, just like on a necklace. He was rocking that baby.
She's rocking it.
Just on a chain around his neck.
Redhead is rocking a baby.
Like rocking that baby.
A big clock, like a big baby necklace? Is that what we're saying?
Just all of season two, Rand's walking around with a snuggly and doesn't explain it.
And then we say they're all linked, right? She says they're all linked. There's sparks and shadows, and the shadows are trying to swallow the sparks, and the sparks are...
trying to light up the darkness, yeah.
Light up the darkness. So they're all linked, the four of them.
So a few episodes ago, I talked about how the last scene of the credits is black with all lights, like a starry night. And I said that, to me, that looked like something from the books, right? That relates to our show, right? It looks like something from Telebrandrion. And the other thing that I think it looks like is this vision.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Well, I didn't want to say that until we got to it in the show, but like that's the other thing.
These are for Tavirin, which again is mentioned in the first episode and never ever mentioned again in the show.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Or what Tavirin are, or anything about Tavirin, or how do you throw that line out there in the first episode and then never explain anything about it?
Well, for what you guys are telling me, I need to pay attention to that for when they explain it in season 3, episode 6.
You might have to wait that long, Brendan. There's a couple more visions, though. So when Rand goes back to Min before he decides to leave with Moraine, he talks to her and she tells about when she was in Tarvalon as a little girl, that she saw a man with the same sword. She saw blood and snow and a baby born on the slopes of Dragon Mount. So that, and then I think that's about the point where we get the flashback to continue the cold opening. And then you see Tam take off his helmet and he grabs the baby. And then you see the woman's dead and you realize that that's Rand.
That reminds me, I wanted to ask, and this might be something you can't actually answer, so I will take my answer in Zoom chat or text or whatever. So Tam is not Rand's biological father at all.
No.
That wasn't like a Romeo and Juliet thing.
No.
Okay, fine. All right.
Nope.
I that's what I thought. I just wanted to confirm.
Rand's father and mother are neither who he thinks they are.
Okay. Rand's just adopted. Got it. All right.
Yeah. And then she mentions, Rand says, like, what do you see around me? And she says, rainbows, carnivals, and three beautiful women. I don't know if that has any bearing going into the future, because she kind of said it like, jokingly.
Yeah, Rand walks out of there going, I'm not coming back. That's the impression that he gets.
Well, he asks about the eye. He says, am I coming back from the eye? And she doesn't answer him.
Right.
Which he just takes it as like, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think that that's, you know, whatever. There's an intentional misdirect. And I think that any seer worth their salt doesn't give you straight answers to things. So I guess, Brendan, to your point, like, as a never reader, a first time reader, whatever we're supposed to call you, did you think that, like, her carnival comment was like a real prediction, or was that like just blowing smoke up his ass?
I think it was probably some kind of metaphorical carnival. But again, everything I think is a metaphor in this show turns out to be an actual thing or an actual place. So maybe they're going to a circus in the next episode. I don't know.
Either world, there's an actual eye in the world.
Right. It's an eye.
It's blinking at me.
And I want to be clear, I don't necessarily mind that, because I'm all for, like, I figured the Blight was going to be some sort of Mordor-esque place where it's just vaguely, generically bad. But no, it's just a bunch of dead trees, and that sort of straightforwardness is fine by me. I'm not necessarily complaining, it's just something I've noticed.
Before we move on from Min, like, I just want to get Jen, if you don't, I know that Min's like one of your favorite characters, like, how excited were you to see her on screen?
I was excited, but not as excited as I wanted to be. I have, like I said, thoughts about this episode that I can't talk about right now.
All right.
But, I was interested to see how they did her visions. I thought they did it well.
Yeah, they did do a good job of that. I thought they did a really good job of showing those visions as well. So I'd like to wrap up the spoiler-free segment. Let's give our star ratings for this episode.
Oh, can I just, before we do the star ratings, can I say one thing?
Sure.
We didn't talk about him at all, but that Lord Agomar guy.
Yeah.
He was wearing a like vest shoulder pad thing that was just like a whole dead bird. That it looked like he just put it on right after he killed it, and that is that's a good look. And I approve, and I'm a big fan of that guy. That is some Kraven the Hunter shit, and I'm here for it.
We should be seeing more of him.
I hope so.
Agumon was only a little bit. He was super dope.
He was. Yeah, he was really cool. We didn't even talk about Lan and Nynaeve hooking up, but I think we can skip that. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that.
Squee, it was awesome. Whatever.
It was okay. Star ratings for this episode, Tom. I know you have strong feelings about this episode.
This was my second favorite episode.
Your first favorite episode? Episode 5?
Episode 3 was my favorite episode.
Oh, you're episode 3. Okay, a lot of people love that episode 3.
I love episode 3.
Me included.
Yeah, this is, and it's close. It's just underneath. So I'm going to give this 4.5 stars.
Wow.
All right, Jen.
I think I have to do 3.75 again. I hate it. I don't hate the episode. I hate that I'm giving it 3.75 stars.
Well, then don't hate yourself and give it a different rating.
I can't.
Actually, she didn't talk to you. You'll rate every episode 3.75. That's what it says to you.
Not every episode, just the last two.
Brendan?
I'm giving it exactly the same score as last week for the completely opposite reason. Last week, I didn't like anything that happened, and I thought it was executed really well. This week, I liked everything that happened, and I didn't think it was executed well at all.
So a 3.
Yeah.
That was your episode. I'm going to give this episode a 4. I liked it a lot. Again, there were like two things I didn't like. The big one was the whole Perrin Egwene Ran thing, which I thought was totally unnecessary. We could have got more Loial instead of that. And I actually was I didn't like that Nynaeve and Lan got together this soon. I thought they could have really stretched it out and made that almost like, oh, when are they going to finally get together thing, and could have played that out longer and built up that tension between them. So I was a little upset that they kind of blew their, I was going to say metaphorically, but it would have been literally. So I'm not going to say anything at all. Okay. All right. And thus concludes our spoiler-free portion of the episode. Brendan, thank you for joining us. We shall see you next week for the conclusion and the final episode of Season 1 of The Wheel of Time.
And the holiday special.
And the holiday, the Christmas special. So, Brendan, fare thee well.
All right, guys.
All right.
Take care, bud. Bye.
And we're back with our spoiler-free segment. If you have not read the books, please proceed with caution, because we will be spoiling things that happen in the books. If you don't want to be spoiled, turn it off. If you don't mind, then listen through. Go ahead. We dare you.
I feel like for next season when we do this, I feel like we should just spoil something huge from the last book. As soon as you give that message, drop a big spoiler from the final book. Just like we
from
told
the last
you.
Book. You, oh, when you
just
say the last book, you mean
people aren't paying attention.
The just last like, book. Of the... Hey, look, if you haven't read the books, don't listen. And just so you know, X happens, right? Like, we're not going to do it now. It's already established that we don't. I think for season 2, we should do that. Like, really show them, you know.
I don't really have many. Listening. Yeah, I don't really have many spoiler notes. I mean, this isn't even spoiler, but like, shout out to Uno. For getting a line in there, and our buddy Ummer was in it, you know.
Our buddy.
Sadly enough, he won't be returning to the show. He was supposed to be playing Ingtar, but he got a better gig, so they kind of cut out, I think, any mention of him being Ingtar, and he was just random guy, you know, Faldaren soldier.
Yeah,
Can we talk about the beginning, because it bothered me, and then I think, like, little things bother me, and I hate that I'm getting like this.
Wait, the opening? The cold opening?
Yeah, no, I liked it, but why?
Don't even mention the veil, Jen, or I'm going to...
Not the veil. Who cares about the veil? Right, no. Now. Why is Tigraine have red hair and look like an Aiel?
My wife got confused about that, too. She was like, oh, she's got the red hair like Rand, and I'm like...
she doesn't know... That's not confusion for her, because she doesn't know that
he's not Aiel.
People in the there are people in the world.
You know, Elaine has red.
But,
you know, like Elaine has red gold hair.
But come on, yes, there are people in the world that have redheads. But we're being conditioned to know that people with red hair are Aiel, and it's weird to see a person with red hair that's not Aiel. Now we see an Aiel person with red hair. She's not Aiel.
So,
I don't think she should have had red hair.
So here's my question then to you: what is more bothering to you, the fact that it's Tigraine and she is Tigraine as she is in the books and she just has red hair? Or is it bothering you more that there could be a possibility that they change the story and it's really an Aiel woman?
No, if they change the story, then I don't know. It doesn't bother me that they change the story. If they change the story, then it's fine. Yeah. If they didn't change the story, then she should not look like Aiel just so we don't get it yet.
I think that the show has officially, or if not the show, Rafe Judkins, in his own words, has officially referred to her as Tigraine.
No, her name's Tigraine in the credits. She's
right.
She's Tigraine.
Oh, not she, yeah, you're right. She is. So, she is in the credits. Tigraine Mantir.
I think she's a redhead in the books.
I think I could, you know, I could pull up her.
Or like a strawberry blonde, one. And two, and I mentioned this in our Discord server for earlier, because, again, that's a surprise. They want to surprise you again. And if she looks like she's related to Elaine, if she's a blonde and the first blonde you meet is Elaine, and then everybody in Elaine's family is blonde, and then you'd be like, oh, you know,
I don't
whatever.
Think people would get that.
No, but I think that it's more of a surprise if you find out later on that she wasn't an Aiel. She was secretly the should have been the Queen of Andor or whatever. So I think that's
there's
why.
There's no description. I don't have anything on the wiki, at least, that shares a description of what she looked like. So
yeah, I think that's what the reasoning is.
So I also don't think they... I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
That's it.
No, I was going to say, I don't think they went out of the way to... Like, I don't think her hair's dyed if she's wearing a wig. I think the actress just has that color
hair. No, she has red hair.
I think the actress just has that color hair.
I think so, too.
Yeah. So
they
it's
go
not
out
like
of the
they...
way, but they purposely cast a redhead.
I think if you had a blonde Aiel and they would tell you that the Aiel are redheads, I think that that might tip you off as a viewer.
Right.
That there's something weird about this person.
Hmm. I'm going to put that one, that little nugget away.
That would have been nice, though, to do that. You're right. They made her legit, like, if they purposely made her have, like, dark hair, stand out
dark
hair.
Not dark, blonde hair.
No, if they would have gave her, if they really wanted to, like, make a point of it.
No,
I'm not going crazy. I'm saying if they really wanted to plant a seed, they would have purposely made her have dark hair just because you would have been like, well, she doesn't have the same color hair as Rand. Where did he get that Aiel colored hair?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, at this point, Rand's mother is Aiel.
I thought you were going to make the veil comment. A lot of people are like, well,
no,
why didn't she put a veil up?
I'm
like,
she clearly pulled the veil up. She pulled it down because she's having a baby.
Yes.
And then she just got too distracted to pull it back up.
Excuse me, people. How many of you have seen women doing their Lamaze breathing with veils on, all right?
She was veiled. It wasn't like she was never veiled. She was veiled, she pulled it down for a second, and then she got distracted.
She was doing her breathing exercises.
Having a baby.
And I know that, again.
And right. Getting attacked by a dozen guys.
And like people are like, every Aiel would put their veil
she's
up.
She's not Aiel, though.
And she's not Aiel.
She's
not real
Aiel. She's not
born Aiel.
Yeah,
right? She's only learned it for the last couple of years. So,
plus, I think, to be honest, it was a TV thing. They wanted you to see her face.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
They wanted you, A, to know that it was a woman, clearly. I mean, obviously she was. She was having a baby. But I think they just wanted you to see her face TV-wise. This was like a TV thing, like the thing with the dagger where they put the jewel somewhere else just because for TV you could see it better there.
Right.
I have no problem with the veil.
That's right. Spider-Man takes his mask off in every Spider-Man movie, even though Spider-Man never takes his mask off.
Yes, enough. Exactly. Thank you, Tom.
Although I don't think they'll be doing that with just regular Aiel. I think most of the Aiel characters. But, like, you're going to see Gaul's face more than you probably think that you would.
Yeah.
You know?
Jen, you had min thoughts you wanted to keep for this section.
I didn't really have min thoughts. I don't know. Between that and the love triangle, I don't know. Like,
I thought min was
bother
different.
Me, and then I'm, like, annoyed. And I'm getting to be that person that I don't want to be.
Yeah, no, I think all of us have had our things that bothered us, and I feel like we all have kind of, there are certain parts of the book that we, or the story that bother us when they change them and not others, and this is just your section.
Yeah.
My thing is not really a book thing, but you know, that cave being so far away, it's just a logistical thing.
I just feel like I'm not enjoying it like I want. Like, Nynaeve and Land got together, awesome. The beginning was awesome. Like, I don't know, but like, I'm just not like, everyone's like, episode 7 is the greatest, and I'm over here like,
I don't think it was the greatest.
People were saying that in the last episode too, and that was my least favorite, right?
But why did I really like episode 3? Because Matt was in it? Like,
I think
I don't
it
like
was
it
well,
unless Matt's
it
in
was
it.
Well written, it was well done. So, I mean, I was going to kind of hold off on this until like the show's over, but I think one of the, like, if we took all the aspects of the show so far, like the writing, the directing, the acting, the set design, the costuming, the CGI, I think the weakest part of it in like as a whole, and I'm not talking about this for every episode because some of the episodes is good and some it's bad, is the writing. I think the writing might be the weakest part of this show.
either that or the editing, and not like, and I don't mean like, I don't mean the shot to shot editing. I mean like the story editing. I don't know what they're cutting in. And then yes, it was COVID, and yes, you didn't get to do reshoots with Barney Harris, and that probably impacted some things.
Right. But,
And it could be editing. You're right. The original scripts could be great, like better, and then they just had to cut a lot of the stuff that helped make things sense. So it could be the editing that could be part of the issue. But do they have different... That's just one thing I don't know, and I don't know if anybody listening in chat knows this, but I know they're filming blocks, and there's different writers, and there's different directors, and different directors of photography and whatnot, but is the editor the same for the entire
season? But I don't know off the top of my head.
So if it is, then I would be inclined to say it's not the editor doing the editing, because they've done really good jobs in some episodes, and other episodes it's been not so good. So that's why I kind of fall it to the writing. And it's not every episode, though. It's like inconsistent.
Well, again, I think that things that we like and don't like are different in that regard. And I think that we've consistently said the pace of this show is not consistent, right? The pace of where the story cuts and doesn't cut, and that is the editor, right? Now, that might be because the editor might be handicapped by what the script is and what they filmed, so it could be the writing. But when you talk about,
I think it's
like,
inconsistent. I just think the writing's inconsistent. I don't think the writing's necessarily bad.
It's a group of people, you're going to get that.
No, I think it's inconsistent within episodes sometimes.
I just feel like there's a lot of talking, too. Like, there was the fight at the beginning, but then, like, I don't know the ways there was. I don't know what it is. I keep trying to put my finger on it, and I can't.
Min was different. She had a different attitude than I feel like the Min in the books had.
Yeah, I did like her, but when he came back and she was like, "I know who you are." Do you think that's because she had her vision that she was gonna end up with him already?
I think when she said three beautiful women, she was talking about herself and two other people.
She was, but I know who you are.
I would have liked to be a little bit more coy, but whatever. It didn't ruin it for me.
I was really surprised that, with the exception of the lights in the darkness, every vision she had was completely different than the books. I like that because.
Perrin's got the hammer, right? That's his vision.
There's no blood
coming from his mouth. Is that just because he's like a wolf?
I think it's just wolf. Yeah, I just think they're just
like there's no wolf. There's no falcon and hawk. There's no.
Well, they might not. Marilyn might be cut. Right. I mean, who knows?
I understand that, and I think it's because Rafe has to be very careful because he doesn't know how far he's going to be able to go.
You don't want to do a prediction that you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and I don't hold that against him. This is not. It's TV, so they kind of has to be careful with that. So I think they had to put stuff that they know they were going to be able to put in the show.
And I think that it's better. Again, this is something that I wanted them to do. I don't want it to be. I don't want to know everything. I want to be able to have to like figure out exactly what stuff is. I have no idea who the freak that baby is.
Yeah,
I have no idea. Like, it
give
was
me that
dark
baby.
Yeah, that's the baby that they finally cast.
That's the baby they finally cast.
The baby got cast over and over again because of the stopping.
That, to me, looked like it was Min and Rand's baby, if I had to guess, because it was a dark hair. Yeah, I know. And I don't
after
know
the show ends, maybe they have a baby?
Who knows?
But why would they put that in there?
Maybe it's Elaine's baby.
That was a dark-haired baby. Black hair.
It was a dark-haired baby.
I think...
It's not how the end of Rand's baby.
It's a fake vision. What we saw is fake.
No, I hate that.
It has to have to do with the baby.
I didn't realize it. I forgot. My first instinct was that she was lying. But then she says later on, I saw that sword. And that's how she knew.
She knew who he was, yeah.
Because of the sword. Like, it was that sword that the guy had. You're carrying it.
She said that.
Maybe she doesn't want Moraine to know.
Well, she knows
he's the dragon for some reason.
Well, she knows she's going to marry him or be with him or whatever. Like, she knows that.
Yes. But I don't think they would show us a lie. They wouldn't show us a vision and her.
Yes, I don't think so.
It's not that she wouldn't say it. I could see her saying that she sees something that's a lie. But then if they show it to us, I think then that's the line they've drawn in the sand. And you can't go back. Like, we showed this to you that she saw this. If they're going to start saying, well, no, she was only lying, then I can't believe anything.
What if she says later, like, I lied about the vision?
Yeah, and they don't say it's Ran's baby. Thank you, Amis, to pointing out in chat that no one says it's Ran's baby. He's just cradling a baby.
Maybe it's him, like, hugging babies, like a
maybe
president.
Maybe it's Lan and Nynaeve's baby. Maybe they have a baby.
He's like glad-handing the people.
Maybe.
And he's, like, cuddling
he's
your
running
baby.
Running for mayor.
Running for Dragon Reborn.
Maybe the baby is the world. And he's holding it.
It's cradling the world.
Maybe the baby is.
Maybe the baby's the eye.
Yeah, the baby is the eye. Yeah, I don't think you have to feel bad about not digging some things about this. The only reason I like the love triangle stuff is it explains stuff that doesn't make any goddamn sense in the first episode.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just, but, just be gone like, now from everything.
Here's the thing.
Wiped from the show.
Nope. Here's the thing. And I don't like it, and I don't think it's a good idea, but to me, it's clear where they're going with this, right? One, it's awful, right? Because now Perrin's going to get married at the end of the next season or the beginning of season 3 or whatever it is.
I don't know.
He is. He's definitely going to marry Fael. And their relationship for almost the entirety of the books is based on, like, her insane jealousy, which he feels is completely misplaced, right? And they have a hard time communicating. Now, he is racked with guilt not only for murdering his wife, but for being mentally or emotionally unfaithful to her. And now he's married to another woman who consistently accuses him of being emotionally unfaithful to him. And like now there's actual fodder for that. Instead of Fael being unreasonable to the reader or to the viewer, it's not unreasonable because you know that Perrin's a piece of shit. That's what
like
you know. As
like,
a viewer on the show, you know that Perrin's a piece of shit.
I want Fael to be unreasonable, damn it.
But how would she know that that happened?
She doesn't
know.
She doesn't know.
She's
you
still
know.
Being unreasonable.
You as a viewer, though, no. will
you
justify.
Just she just doesn't know that she's being reasonable.
From her perspective, she's being unreasonable. But or from other people who don't
only
know Perrin.
Only for Perrin, she's being reasonable.
Only from, I've said this before on our show, if you haven't, go find Lesbian Nerdy's YouTube videos about Fael. And they really explain that, like, a large part of the reason that you think that she's so unreasonable is that you see so much of her from Perrin's point of view. And
well, he's smelling her
he's
emotions.
Smelling her emotions that she's not acting on or showing. And he's reacting to those. And that's really unfair. So, like, she's internally jealous because she's insecure, doesn't show that, doesn't say that, doesn't act on it. He acts like she's being jealous and she gets upset. Because
it's like that movie, What Women Want, right? Is that the one with Mel Gibson?
Yes.
Where he
right,
can
yes. right. Except I think I don't. Yes, but like that.
But what was like the thing? We're finished. Go ahead.
But like, I think that okay, fine. You're adding colors to that relationship, but the colors that you're adding really just make Perrin a worse person. And I don't understand why you would do that. I thought it was a really, really bad decision when we first heard about this. I thought it was a really bad decision when I saw it. And everything that's happened since continues to make me think this is the worst decision that they've made so far on the show. There's nothing that's come out of Perrin killing his wife that I think is good, short-term or long-term, in this show.
Yeah, it's just I think it's just a easy, cheap way to get justify why Perrin acts like brooding and guilty and the
I
way he does.
I don't care about that. Like, I care, but I'm over that. Like, fine, that happened.
I think I'm over that,
too. I understand why they did it, but the Egwene thing is And then when Rand's like, oh, the day me and Egwene hooked up, you just, like, turned around and proposed to Layla, like...
No. No, that's not what he says. He's saying that the only reason Egwene hooked up with me is because she knew you were off the market. He's accusing her.
He proposed to Layla when he knew Egwene was off the market. I thought the same thing with Jen,
like,
because that's
he
not
was like, actual... okay, Egwene's off the table for me now. I'm just going to propose to Layla.
No. He's accusing her like that he's the second choice.
He's right in Perrin's face when
either
he says
way,
it.
Yeah, but that's a dig on her. That's not a dig on him.
We can't move past it, Rare. No, we're all going to move past it. Yeah, now I forgot what I wanted to bring up, too.
I'm really upset that Loyal's not in the second half of the episode. It doesn't make any sense.
Hell? Yes,
me too. I love every minute of him.
Honestly, I don't care about the love triangle stuff. I understand why they're doing it. I don't like it, but I understand why they're doing it.
Yeah.
The half a star knock that I gave this show is that they don't even write him off. He just doesn't show up anymore.
It's just not
why doesn't
Where is
anyone...
he? He doesn't know anybody else.
Right.
What's he doing?
Well, whatever. He only knows Rand anyway.
You're right. Yeah. Where was he? I would have liked to see more of him.
Is he going to go with them? Are they going to go to the...
I don't think they're going to go.
I said this either last episode or the episode before. I think it might have been last episode, because they're really drilling home, and we didn't bring this up with Brendan, but they're really drilling home, Moraine, is that everyone who's not the dragon who will go to the eye will die. She's so certain about this, and they keep bringing it up in the show. And I think I said it last episode that we recorded that, are they setting it up that Rand goes by himself? And I was fucking right, people.
Well, Moraine is going, though.
Well, yeah, well, she doesn't count. I meant, like, out of all the kids. Now, that's the question. Do you think that they're going to follow after? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say what I think happens. And we saw this in the trailer, right? We see all the Shannarans with their crossbows pulling up.
Yeah, right.
I think the Trollocs are going to come and attack Faldara. I think maybe...
Through the Waygate?
Through the gate, through Tarwyn's Gap. I think they're going to come through Tarwyn's Gap.
They're going to pass Moraine and Rand on the way?
Moraine and Rand are already in the Blight.
Where are they coming from?
The Blight's huge. It happens in the books. They go right past, they go through Tarwyn's Gap into the Blight. And then
they're in the Blight for days.
They're going to be in the Blight for one day.
But yeah. I'll say, I think that's possible. Fane's there. He's got to be there for a reason, right? The last time you saw him going into a place definitively, Trollocs came the next night.
I hope we get a capture of Fane in the next episode too. I think they're not going to go. I don't think the rest of the group is going to go.
Are they killing Moraine at the end of the season?
No.
Oh my God, Tom.
Get out of here.
I feel like they're setting that up so obviously. And I'm like, I'm really speculating whether Moraine's going to die.
She's still on set recording right now. She's filming.
Is it? I was thinking about that too, Jen. And I'm like, did they just pay Rosamund Pike to come on set and do nothing just to keep people off ballot?
She's a producer of the show.
She also lives in Prague. No, I don't think they are. I was legitimately debating it, though. Like,
no.
I feel like they're setting Moraine up to die early, but I think maybe they're just trying to set up the viewers. I think they're doing it for the viewers' benefit. It's a red herring,
and I think that she thinks she's going to die.
That's why she hasn't brushed her hair in, like, a week.
Yes, yeah. She doesn't care anymore. And, like, I loved that the conversation at the end of this the end of Act 2 of this episode, whatever, between her and Lan is, like, the inverse of the conversation that they have at the in the middle of the Great Hunt, where, like, she does that to, like, bind Lan to her, I think, where she, like, breaks him down and then, like, locks him up again. But in this one, it was really like, get the F away from me. You now have something else to live for if when I die, right? Like, and he's basically, and now you know, like, oh, if she dies, he's probably just gonna, like, get bonded by Nynaeve and it'll be okay for him.
It's not...
Like, he's emotionally ready to have something else to live for in a way that Steppen wasn't.
And, like, the masking of the bond shit also needs to go. I hate that, too.
I don't know, but it's real.
Oh, she bond again. No, it's not.
I think the first time they did it was to set up this happening. Yeah,
but it's like, no, you can't do that.
You can, though. It's
no. You showed it to me. It's not the same thing. It's not in the books. All of a sudden, people aren't masking the bond all over the place. Like,
when they mask
the bond. It is slightly different in the books. Yes.
So when you mask the bond in the books, to my understanding, it's basically...
It's just concentration.
Yeah, but it's like you don't get an emotional read on them, and all you can do is basically get a vague sense of direction about where they are. Right? That's it. It's basically the same thing. And Len doesn't need a sense of direction. He knows where Moraine is.
Yeah, they don't. They like, know where she went.
And they know where she's going.
Yeah.
I think it actually makes sense if they don't go. I don't know why Len wouldn't go. But it's if some of them are staying behind for us to see that battle.
The reason Len's not going to go is because Trollocs and Shadowspawn are going to come through Tarwyn's Gap and they're not going to be able to go.
We can't see that battle through, like, the eyes of Agomar. Yet we're not there yet, so
we're
need our people. No, I think that there's gonna be
two
rivers people staying, for us to see that
they'll be involved in it,
right?
It's not gonna go well until Rand appears and basically saves the day after his tete a tete with.
Do you think that Egwene now gets pissed that Rand left? I don't know, after she said she would be on his side no matter what, but now, like,
yeah, of course she's gonna get mad. Why not? I mean,
are they going to be on the outskirts again?
I think at this point, Rand's going to be like, well, I'm the Dragon Reborn. We can't have a relationship together. This can't be.
But he knew that. And then he still had sex with her one last time, though.
Yeah. He also.
I don't think he.
Well,
he's a young, virile boy who has his needs. Okay. And also, I was going to say, he's also probably, you know, debating with himself in his head whether he believes that he's the Dragon Reborn or not. And he finally comes to the conclusion, I think, maybe at the end.
I think that he's also understanding that he's probably going to die. If not to tomorrow, then sometime in the near future, either by the Red Ajah or by going mad, right? He understands what the being the Dragon Reborn means to him, even if he wins the death sentence. And he would like to have one last night with the woman that he loves. And I think that that's part of what he's talking about. Like when he's saying, I'll go with you to Tarvalon, I'll be your warder. He already knows that's a lie in this show.
Yeah, like, I agree.
You said you would be her warder.
Doesn't
that was
she
a
says
lie.
That in the books, right? In the scene when they're in the Blight, right? She says, "Oh, you could be my warder," yeah. And you could, and he's kind of like, "Yeah, I guess."
Right. He brings it up.
No, I know. In this, yeah, he brings it up.
Yeah, it's a different vibe. It's a different vibe.
Different right? vibe. You're right. It's different. It's coming from the other side. Yeah, like I said, I think we're gonna get some Fane in the next episode. I think they're gonna capture him. Is my guess.
And he's gonna
battle.
I think maybe before the battle, and he's going to be like, yeah. And they're all going to come out, you know?
Did you hear the music when walked out of the way gate? The whistling was playing, but it was music?
This time it was
what's
whistling
his,
music.
Like, I can't think of it right now.
Leitmotif?
Like, yeah, but the actual tune.
Oh, I don't
know.
Yeah.
I was like,
I was a little miffed that Landon and Eve got together so soon. I thought they should have like kind of built up the tension longer and longer.
Okay. I agree with you. I don't disagree. I was surprised that they pushed it. One, I don't think you can regret the fact that Daniel Hedy took his shirt off, though. But
once he took his shirt off, it was all over.
It was all over.
Could do.
Yeah, I was ready to go in. but they're going to spend the next episode thinking, well, Moraine's going to die, and we're going to be together now, and that's what's going to happen. And then Moraine's going to come back. And then you have a really awkward situation where he's still Moraine's warder. And they have a romantic relationship.
And they're going to split, right? Because they're going to wind up going in two different... I imagine, like, next season, right. They're going to be splitting, and she's not going to see Lan again for a very long time.
Now it's a different kind of unrequited relationship. But you don't have this death wish Lan that's like, do not marry me. I will not make a widow of you. But you have this duty...
Well, he might. He could still do that because he's saying, I'm still bound to Moraine.
He's like the guy throwing rocks at a dog. Get out of here. I can never marry you.
Is he going to old yeller her? Is that what
yes.
No, but
it's white fang. He's
Come
white
on,
fanging
get.
Her. White fanging.
Oh, is it white fang? I thought it was old yeller. It was white fang.
Old
sorry.
Yeller gets shot. I hope it isn't old yeller.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, Jesus,
is he going to white fang her?
Get out of here. Get.
Go on. Get. Get on. Get
I think it's a different thing. It could be a different thing here. It could be like they both want to be. Sorry. I apologize. I tried to make a real point too soon.
Are you white fanging me?
Since laughing at the gift
from new
in
girl.
Chat.
Sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
CC.
But yeah, I think that there's a, you change the dynamic. And now it's, we want to be together, but we can't. That gives Nynaeve the drive to be like, well, now I have to be an Aes Sedai. Because then I can get the bond. And you still have that, but it's a whole different thing. You have this like, instead of a will they, won't they, it's can they. Right?
Yeah.
They're star-crossed
and that's
lovers
why,
instead.
Yeah, right? And I said, like, this was, like, it bothered me, but it wasn't, like, it wasn't on the level of the, it was just, like, something that miffed, I guess, me a little bit that they did that. But I could see them writing around it. I was, like, because it was such, like, a long scene, too, of, like, during the whole time when they're eating, you know, when she goes and spies on him and whatever. I'm just, like, are you guys gonna wind up kissing? Are you guys gonna wind up having, please don't, please.
Dig old fuck. Dig old fuck.
It's so funny because when they like, then they depart and they go to their separate rooms. Sarah's like, oh, they're going to go back to each other's room. And I'm like, I hope not. And she's like, why? I said, I didn't say because that's not how it happens in the books. I was saying because that's so fucking cliche and they do that in every goddamn movie or show. It's like they leave and then all of a sudden they're back at each other's doors. Yes. Like, oh, we didn't know that was going to happen. Yeah. It's only happened in 100 other fucking movies we've seen. The way they did it bothered me, I think, more than what actually happened.
All right. That didn't bother me at all. I have to ask a question to the two of you, and this is a real question. I know it's going to sound silly, and I don't mean it to be silly. During the whole love triangle stuff, when Perrin and Rand get right up in each other's faces and Perrin like kind of bull foreheads him, did either of you think they were going to kiss? Because I really legitimately for a second went, is he going to kiss him?
When Rand was like, did that like laugh, that like sarcastic laugh,
yeah.
And Perrin was just like, what's so funny?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, it's on.
Yeah.
But I still didn't like it.
No, I didn't think they were going to kiss one bit.
I didn't. There was a
quick vibe of like, who's jealous of whom right now? What's happening?
I did get Usual Suspect vibes from the Rand reveal of the flashbacks and stuff.
Yeah.
They dropped the coffee cup. But I liked all of that. Can I just say, like, we didn't talk about this in the first half, and we normally do.
Later.
I don't. Well, no. We talked about that.
Oh, we did. Damn it.
I thought the acting performances here were really, really good. I thought that Yosha was really good. We talked about it in episodes 5 and 6 when you have, like, the grown-ups acting, you know, whatever. How, like, it was a little bit like, okay, kids, watch how it's done. But, like, he was really good. Madeline Madden was very good.
I think the acting has been great in the entire show.
I feel like Marcus is getting a little bit one note in his performance of, like, the kind of slump-shouldered...
Well, he doesn't have much dialogue.
Yeah, I was
going
to say he doesn't
have
anything to do.
He barely has anything dialogue that they gave him, so it's...
Yeah, this is not a knock on him.
I think he's making the most of what he's got to work with.
Yeah.
I hope that he has more. I think that he had a lot more colors to him in the early episodes when he's, I guess, basically after they get separated in Shadow Logoth, you know. Marcus in the first episode as like I'm a married man and you're my buddy and I'm going to like help you walk through like how to get going with this. Like, I like that part of him, like that he is a little bit more confident and like with himself.
He probably had more dialogue in the first episode than he's had in the rest of the season combined.
He's dealing with a lot of things right now. He's dealing with, you know, obviously all the grief. He's dealing with the torture. He's trying to get through all that stuff.
He doesn't even bring that up. You wouldn't even think he was tortured. Like, they don't even reference it or...
They did in episode 6, where, like...
Yeah, the last episode. Yeah, that was the only time. But that's... And
he is, like, he's walking around.
He didn't have one line of dialogue. He wasn't even conscious in that episode.
Yeah, no.
He was lying on a table for a scene and unconscious. That was all he had.
You don't have to tell me. That was my biggest problem with episode 6, is that they clearly love... and think a huge focus of the show should be Aes Sedai politics. And if I had my wherewithal, that's where I would be doing a lot of cutting. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, when I reread, I don't care about Saladar. Like, that stuff was all boring as hell to me. Like, Egwene's cool. What happens to her is cool. But I don't care about the Aes Sedai politics of this. And I feel like that's going to be a really big part of the show. I'm going to have to, like, kind of adjust myself to that. That was my problem with the last episode. Like, you didn't have scenes to develop these characters that are going to be important. And then, whatever. I mean, if they were going to do love triangle stuff, I guess I could have waited for that anyway. But, like, I think the reason I like this episode so much is that while it is, again, almost completely different than what actually happens in the books, it feels like it's propelling forward, again, in the right way. And that's what I loved about it the most. Like, it's very, very exciting for me. But I don't know what's happening. I still have no idea how the show is going to resolve itself. We think it's going to be, and I agree with you, I think it's going to be Rand and Moraine alone at the Eye. There'll be some kind of Balzamon verbal confrontation, and then Rand's just going to go and kill all the Trollocs, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Hope for a green man.
I don't think we're getting a green man.
It ain't over till it's over.
Maybe Steve. Maybe it's Steve. Steve is the green man. The Steve man. All right, let's wrap it up here. Jen, do we have any new patrons to thank?
We do. We have 3. No, wait a minute. Again, at the last second, we have 4 new patrons.
Whoa.
So,
this record for us.
It is. I think it might be a record. Joining the Illuminators Guild, we have Greg Boldiston and Marina.
Thank you, Greg and Marina.
Joining the Company of Chelvannon, we have Why Not.
Thank you, Why Not.
I feel like everyone should say that and join the Company of Chelvannon. Why not?
Why not? Joining the Dreamwalkers, we have Badger Honey X.
Thank you so much
to all of our new patrons. Thank you for joining. Thank you for supporting us. And thank you to all of our other patrons, our current patrons. We love all of you.
Thank you so much for supporting us. You feed our drinking habits. No, just kidding.
That's not what we spend the money on. That's crazy.
But we spend all our money on expensive bottles of booze. Courvoisier, Macallan,
Yum.
Pappy Van Winkle, all the good stuff, baby. That's what we spend our money on.
Pappy Van Winkle.
Oh, yeah, Pappy Van Winkle. Very expensive bourbon. Aged for a very long time. As long as It's namesake.
It's almost been 8 years.
All right, let's wrap it up here. I want to remind everyone to follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Join us over in Discord to continue the conversation there. Rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And check out our merchandise and Patreon pages if you would like to support us that way. Links to all the aforementioned information will be included in the show notes to the show. Also, a reminder, new Wheel of Time convention coming this summer, July, WattCon. Go check it out, wattcon.com. Well, that's fun to say, wattcon.com. Did I say that right? Yeah, I did. Yeah. I'll put a link to that in the show as well, in the show notes. We're going to be there. A lot of other content creators, a lot of people are going to be there. Get your tickets before they sell out. It's in Columbus, Ohio. It's going to be a hoot nanny from what I hear. So yeah, any last words, Jen, Tom?
One more episode.
One more episode, buddy.
Oh, my God. Guys, we went through the whole season.
What are we going to do after?
I don't know. We're going to have to do a whole year of new podcast shows.
We're going to have to take a day off, I think, maybe.
Oh, well, man.
You know what?
Maybe New Year's.
You get Christmas off. You get Christmas off.
No, no. We're going to be recording next week.
No, I know. I'm saying we're going to record on Christmas Eve, and I'm giving you Christmas Day off.
That's
okay. So next week is our holiday finale episode of the season. We're not done. It's not like we're not going to be around after the last episode.
No,
we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about.
Maybe Brendan might not be, but like the rest
Brendan
of us.
Brendan will likely be gone. Brendan will
He'll be in our hearts.
He'll be in all our hearts. And
we'll be old yeller him.
White fang him. Tommy's gonna old yeller?
We're going to put a bullet in him.
Oh my God.
Brendan.
No.
You're a good co-host.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Take this gun out to the barn.
Yeah. So, all right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And you'll hear us next time.